Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
And welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. Today is Tuesday, April the 8th, 2014, and we welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Okay, it's going to take him just a minute to get switched over there. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's a delight to be here. Our blessing is the opportunity, once again, to support and share in the understanding of this most amazing ancient technology called forgiveness. We live in a world that tells us the opposite of the truth. It's hard to get to live in truth when your culture teaches you the opposite of truth. And one of the most important tools you could possibly have to change your life and to live truly as a human being is the tool of forgiveness. And our culture tells us that forgiveness is about how if I'm in pain, if I'm in turmoil, if I'm in trauma, it's all somebody else's fault, then all I need to do is forgive them. And that brainwash has permeated virtually our whole culture until everyone is out there talking about everybody else as the cause of what's happening inside themselves. And that leads to a total fraud. What we're looking to do is to undo the fraud and get back to the truth of what was being said in a culture that understood the truth of how human dynamics operated. This word, forgive, in the ancient Aramaic language, is the tool with which you go inside of yourself and remove what does not belong in you. Now, you've heard us ask the question before, describe in a single word the essence of the newborn child. And everybody's answer to that question is always some variation on the theme of love. Our offering is the reason that's everybody's answer is because everybody knows what human life is. It is that awesome presence of love. And the world comes pounding in on us as quickly as possible to remove that and to teach us to live in hostility, fear, rage, defensiveness, sadness, vengeance, hatred. And tells us that that's how you get to survive in the real world, when in truth, that's how you get to destroy yourself. So there's a recovery process. Everybody's in recovery. And if you're interested in truly recovering from the insanity of the culture, then there are certain things that you need to know and activate in your life. What I'd like to do is just take a few of the key thoughts that come out of the ancient Aramaic. And if you haven't tapped into that language yet, it is the root language of at least 6 of the world's major religions. On Fridays, we have Aramaic Friday with scholar Dale Allen Hoffman. And the Aramaic language, when you start looking at it in its roots, is not a theological language, although it's been the source of at least six of the world's major religions. It's a physics language. It's a psychological language. It's a genetic language. It is a physics language. It tells us how the world works, and in particular, how we work within the world. You take many of the ideas that come out of the Aramaic and you put them through a Greek filter, and their meaning is lost. What we want to do is reestablish the truth of that original meaning. The first one being that forgiveness is the tool with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged. You know, few would recognize from the Greek translation of the words of the man named Yeshua. They called him Jesus. He was not a religious figure. His name was not El Zeus, Jesus, Jesus. His name was Yeshua. And he talks about cleaning perception. Now, you wouldn't know that's what he's talking about by the Greek translations of the words, but you might remember where he says, "The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become?" Let's see you take that Greek translation and put it to use. Let's see you make any sense of it whatsoever. Why has the meaning been so obscured? Because there are those who want us to stay in our dirtied hostility and fear-based perception, in our defiled minds. Because when we're in a defiled mind, we're not very smart. We've got people who can go out and in business be brilliant and make millions, and they destroy their children and their spouses. They live on the hill with the big cars and the fancy bank accounts and the wonderful investments and the tens of thousands of square feet, but they trash the lives of those close to them. Tell me that they're genius in that mind. Excuse me. I'd offer that if that mind could simply understand the real meaning of the words, "The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become?" If they could just understand that, then they would honor, they would uplift, they would grow families in love rather than out of hostility and fear. So what Yeshua is saying, pardon me, in that particular statement is, not the eye, not looking at your physical eye as the lamp, but what he's saying is perception, the output of your mind, is the light or your guide through your journey in the world. It's your guide to behavior. And then when he says, if the light for you is darkness, which from the Greek means no sense, how can light be darkness? That's ridiculous. But in Aramaic, what he's saying is, if the guide that you follow is some form of hostility or fear, then how deep will your darkness become? You know, Jeannie asks the question every time we do the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and the question is, how many have ever done something they regret? And then she asks people to identify what they were feeling when they did what they regretted. And the words that come from those when they are in regret that describe the state of their own minds is defiled perception. The words are always based in hostility or fear. What was I feeling when I puked on my child, when I ripped the heart out of them by telling them what was wrong with them and why they weren't good enough? What was going on in my mind when I turned to my spouse and I shattered them by declaring their problem and what was wrong with them? What did the mother have going on when she turned to the son or the daughter and trashed their image of themselves with fear-based language and messages about what was wrong with them and how they could never do it right? What was going on in the mind of the father who turned to his son and made sure his son knew how inferior he was? Always when those things happen, the light that person follows, that is, the guide that person follows, is darkness. It's some form of interior hostility and fear. It's a repeat of a power person dynamic. And I don't care how genius the mind is, If one turns when they are in stress, with hostility or fear, then darkness is their guide. Darkness is the light they follow. And how deep does the darkness around them become? This is the practical application of Yeshua's teaching. And so he's saying that we must clean our perception of its fear and hostility in order that this lamp, this guide that we have called perception, is always plugged into light, is always connected to love. How do you do that? You must be consistently and persistently committed to forgiving. Oh, you mean the child that's being so bad, the spouse that's being so non-cooperative, et cetera, I need to let them off the hook? No, nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. We've been taught a lie. Forgiveness has nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook for what's going on inside of you. If the light in your mind, if the guide that you're following is darkness, if your perception is filled with the hostility and fear of the power person in the generations, and you're under stress, and you turn and you violate that person beside you, the child, the spouse, the parent, then what you need is to learn how to go inside yourself and remove what never belonged. That's called forgiveness. If you want to access the forgiveness process, it's freely available on our website. We also have several different forms of DVDs and CDs. You can look at our catalog that you can buy. But that's not required. You can go and access it all freely. And, of course, we're here 5 days a week for a personal conversation to help to strengthen your understanding and your practice of these tools. So if you go to www.whyagain.org, pardon me, you'll see in the center of the page a large bullseye. If you click on that bullseye will link you into a whole series of links. The first one starts out and explains how to begin the forgiveness process. The second link is chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It's a free download, and it tells you about the why and how of the forgiveness process. The third link is an actual worksheet, the step-by-step. Here's how, here's the format for how to change the content of your own mind and clean your perception to get the light for your earthly life, the guide that you follow, back on track with love instead of with hostility or fear. And you can download any one of a half a dozen or more different radio shows where we walk somebody through the whole forgiveness process step by step by step. When you do that, you will get to the point where you will be actually embodying what was called the first law. Now, this topic of law in Aramaic is interesting. It's got nothing to do with what kings would tell us. Everything has been degraded by the world. Law has nothing to do with obedience. Kings want you to obey, so they usurp this word law, and they say, and you must obey my laws, or I've got a big gun that's going to come and get you. And by the way, I'm just copying God because God's got an even bigger gun that's going to come and get you. No such threat ever existed from the Creator. That's a fraud. That's a lie of man. The Creator is love. That is all. And this first law that was being spoken of is something that if you understand it and engage it, then what will occur is that you will be freed of hostility or fear, and you will have a perceptual system that functions out of love. Excuse my throat for being froggy this morning. So when I engage in the forgiveness process, I remove what is unlike love, and my mind is restored to love. So when they said the first law was, well, the Greeks tell us, again, listen to the mistranslation. It's so important because the subtleties that throw us off track are so deceptive. So we're told by the Greeks that the first law is, you've got to love the Creator, you've got to love the neighbor, and do that as you love yourself. Again, a total, complete mistranslation. What it says is, you are responsible in any circumstance in your life for maintaining a condition in your mind that was called rachma. It is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that keeps you connected to love. That's the law. And it isn't something to be obeyed. It's just something that if you understand it and you do it, it happens in your mind and in your life. So what it said was that you keep this filter active in your mind when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor. It's not about loving your neighbor, as the world would tell you, but it's about maintaining a condition of love in your mind so that you don't trash your children and your spouse and the people around you and yourself when you look in the mirror, that you treat yourself from a space of connectedness of your true being. Again, hold a newborn child. You know exactly what your true being is. How do you maintain that? You engage in this first law, and it's something that happens. You maintain a human life when you do that. So we've been given some pretty practical instructions there. If you look at another major piece of the teachings of Yeshua, you hear him saying a word. This is his first public teaching. Got to be an important word. Now, the Greeks translate the word as, blessed are they. And you hear, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. There's no blessed are they in the word tuvehun, the Aramaic word that leads each of the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes are not a nice philosophy. You know, in the Greek world, it's like, oh, isn't that cute, the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes are, and I'll say that for myself, it was the third time that I sat down and wrote them out longhand that I realized what he was giving us was an instruction set, a how-to. And that word tuvehun that's been translated as blessed are they, total complete mistranslation, total complete mislead that takes us in an incorrect direction. That word tuvehun says this: there is a neural structure in you that the Creator put there to guide you to happiness and well-being. It's already in you. You who have covered it up, you who have layered it with hostility or fear, will make it active, will make it available to your conscious awareness if you do these things. And each of the Beatitudes is an instruction set for activating that neural structure. Let me see you melt that one out of the Greeks. It's not there. You can't fathom it from the Greek translations. When you go back to the Aramaic, all of a sudden you find the truth of what he was instructing us in. So this word tuvehun, not blessed are they, but here's how you activate the guidance system in yourself to be able to live in the first law and to clean your perception of all hostility and fear. So that the guide you follow, the light you follow, the behavior prompts from within you are all based in love. There was a known system for doing this. It wasn't known to the Greeks. I mean, you look at, you know, if you want a picture of how long the Greek world has been filled with the viciousness and violence of heroism, go and watch the movie 300. There's actually kind of a second edition of that that's been out in the theaters. We just went and saw it recently. And you look at the refined mindset of murder and viciousness and violence, all in the name of heroism. And you see what's running our culture. It's Greek thought. If Yeshua sat in most churches in this culture, especially the churches that preach hostility and fear, condemnation, guilt, self-deprecation, he would sit there and say, that's all Greek to me. That has nothing to do with what I said. I gave instructions on how to love. I did not give instructions in terrorism. And so the Beatitudes become a mindset. And you can look through the archives, and there are a couple of shows we've done on the Beatitudes where we go step by step by step through them. They're how to achieve the activation of this neural structure that will guide us to love. And then when you go to another major piece of the teaching, you see what's been called the Lord's Prayer, and we're taught that prayer by the Greeks is you say these words, and you hear people, I mean, all over. We travel all over the globe, and we hear people babble these words every Sunday. And they go in direct contradiction to what Yeshua says. He says, don't say all these words. Don't be known for your much speaking. Go into the silence. Go inside yourself. Get quiet. And be the active space of love. In Aramaic, the word prayer means to set a trap for God, which sounds a little strange. But when you realize, for instance, if you have a television set on the roof of your house and you're watching Channel 2 and you're hooked up to that antenna and you've got a perfect picture, the reason you've got a perfect picture is because Channel 2 is being brought in by that antenna. That antenna is a trap for Channel 2. Being aligned properly, it's bringing in Channel 2 perfectly, and you have this crystal clear picture and crystal clear sound because the trap is working well. Your physiology is like that antenna. It is designed to be a trap for the active presence of love. We've been misaligned by the words of hostility and fear used by those who are supposed to be guiding us to the truth of how to function as human beings. We've been misaligned. We've been, you know, if you went up to the top of the antenna and you bent all the arms on the antenna, you wouldn't be watching a clear picture of Channel 2. Those who were the caretakers of the words that guided us from Yeshua to how to live truly as love have bent the arms of our antenna, have distorted us so that it seems logical to threaten children and tell them about how disgusting they are and they should be in self-deprecation and how dirty their body's functions are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How insane is it to live in a culture that says sex is dirty, save it for the one you love? When one of the most beautiful expressions of human love, if love is active in a human being, is that physical intimacy that we were given. But having been destroyed by the words based in hostility and fear, it's become something to do with a straight bodily function. And the truth of it has been lost in the guilt and the fear about, well, Dr. Tim was bringing up yesterday this idea of original sin. You know, here's an idea, a guy who, in the 5th century, every woman he'd get in bed with. And as Dr. Tim shared yesterday, what he did is he bribed the papacy to install this thing called original sin. So now we're taught that we're that, and we are not that. You are made in the image and likeness of love. And Yeshua's teaching is to support you in how to get back there. There's nothing religious about it. So in the Lord's Prayer, what's been called the Lord's Prayer, it's not about babbling, it's about how to align, how to become the trap for the active presence of love. One of the lines in that instruction set is asking the Creator to carve out a space in us for that total, complete presence of love to show up and express to us so that we function as these true human beings. And a good measuring stick for behavior to tell whether or not you're functioning as a human is if what you're about to say or about to do, you could imagine a newborn child saying and doing, they probably are on track. If you can't imagine a newborn saying, thinking, doing what you're about to do, then you're probably not going to be very happy as a result of doing it, because the energy that you will sow within your own field will destroy you. You remember the last idea, step 7 in the reality management, the stress reality management worksheet. By the way, Julie, thanks for that idea for retitling it Stress. When you engage in forgiveness, that last step is to tap into something keyed to love. You can't tap into something keyed to love if your mind has been programmed and filled with hostility or fear and you haven't had the direct physical experience of the active presence of love in yourselves. We're taught to say words about love with our minds and with our mouths, but have we been taught how to bathe the cell in the active presence of love? Not in this culture of viciousness and hostility, even when people talk about God, we haven't been taught that. It's missing, and it's missing because they don't know how to get there. They haven't been listening to the Aramaic Yeshua. They've been listening to the Greeks with their viciousness and their violence. So what we're here to do is to get back to the restoration, to this true active presence of love, and to realize that the whole instruction set that came from Yeshua, and it contradicts much of the earlier teaching. You hear him talking to the Pharisees, and he says, you people, you just guide, you're horrible guides. He nullifies what they've been telling people. Now there are those who will say, no, all the words in that book are true. Excuse me, listen to Yeshua. He nullifies what those earlier guides were teaching. He tells them that their guidance was terrible. And he gives us an instruction set. If you can get back to his original words, he gives us an instruction set for following the guide of the truth of who you are, which is this awesome active presence of love. I mean, just any time you forget, hold a newborn child. And as you do, you realize who you really are and who that person that perhaps you call the enemy really is. And that is that sweet, awesome presence of love that each of us started out as. And engaging in the actual teachings of Yeshua, the actual teachings, not the Greek word, will restore us, will restore literally the physical presence of the activity of love to every cell in your body. If you've been blessed enough to have a taste of that, you know, in this culture of violence and viciousness, where is the person who's ever tasted it? If you've ever tasted it, then let the light of that experience be your guide back to functioning as the truth of who you are and getting out of rote memory, getting out of the structure of the culture that was put into you, that was genetically instilled, put into you by your power person. Use that moment. Go back to that moment every day, every day, every day, every day. Remember that moment of the active presence of love when you knew who you were and you knew what the Creator was. And it didn't have anything to do with what the Greeks told you. Use that as your guide. And strive to return to that state 24/7, 365. And we're here to support you in that. We're here to breathe with you into that. We're here to understand and engage and support you in the process of forgiveness, of cleaning your perception, of establishing as a fixture in your mind this condition that was called Rachman, this condition of love. And when you have that, then you have a true human life. You know, there's an interesting passage where it says a scribe stood up to test Yeshua and said, "Teacher, how do I inherit eternal life?" And Yeshua turns the question back to the man because he knows the man can parrot the words. He knows the man already knows all the words. He doesn't have a clue what they mean, but he knows the words. So he turns the question back to him and he says, "Well, how do you read it? What does it say?" And of course, the man parrots the words he's been taught by the vicious ones, by those functioning out of hostility and fear. He's been taught, you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself. He's been taught a Greek idea. He's been given the words. Actually, in Aramaic, what it says is, you maintain a condition of rachma in your mind. You maintain this filter called love when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, and this is how you maintain your human life. But the man parrots an answer back, according to the Greek translations. And then Yeshua tells him what question his question answers, and it's not the one but eternal life, answers the man, and he says, you spoke the truth. When he parroted these words, he says, you spoke the truth, and he says, do this, and you shall live. If love is not active in you, if you have not established this condition in your mind so that the gateway is there for your human life to come in, if love is not active in you, you're not human. And so what Yeshua is saying is, be restored to your humanness. Live in this out-presence of love. When you go to behave toward your children, when you go to behave toward your spouse, the person you look at in the mirror, the person you work for, the person you work with, the person you meet walking down the street, maintain this condition in your mind so that you're functioning as a human being, as this sweet presence of love that you were designed to function as. And then a violent word can't come out toward your child, toward your spouse, toward your parent, toward your neighbor, toward yourself. A violent thought can't happen when that's open. So when this man says, what do I do to inherit eternal life? In essence, Yeshua says, Mac, what are you talking about eternal life for? You're already dead. You have no love in you. You have no life in you. Stored. He says, do this and you shall live. Live as the active presence of love. Then you've got a human life. Then maybe we can talk about eternal life. But in essence, he's saying, if you don't have love in you, you're already dead. You don't have to be concerned about eternal life. So he's addressing a culture, very much like the culture we live in. Everywhere you turn, you look at the political discourse, and it's filled with such degrading language and such degrading words and images, such degrading behavior. Watch the television set. How many murders, how many times, if you put a kid in front of a television set, has a kid seen someone punching and kicking and hitting at someone else, picking up a gun or a knife and shooting, throwing something at someone in their viciousness and their violence? You can't brainwash a kid with that and expect a kid to function as a human being. And yet that's what's taken over our whole culture. That's the media. That's the whole game. If you're going to sit in front of that kind of media, please breathe and forgive and remove those frequencies from yourself so that you can be restored to the truth of who you are, what we're all designed to function as. And if you've had that taste, even if it was for a second, which oftentimes that's what many people get the first time, you did a forgiveness, you did a worksheet, or you breathed, and you got a taste of that sweet, awesome presence of love and knew who you were and knew your actual relationship. And I'm talking about in the real world, but I'm not talking about a religious idea. You knew your actual relationship with the Creator. And use that as your beacon, as your guide. And if you've lost awareness of that, use that as the light to guide you back to how we're designed to function as human beings. And that's what we're here to support in the world. And Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
We do, and he's on, and we also have a caller.
Cool. Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see what's on his mind today. Anything to share with us, Tim?
Well, I think if you want to know what's on my mind, you just read your mind. I spent the morning, I woke up with kind of feeding on sessions last night, and I woke up with the need to track down Greg Braden's book, The Isaiah Effect, and the subtitle of that book is Decoding the Lost Science of Prayer and Prophecy, and I haven't read it for years, but it's a 2001 book that I read a couple times, and he was on the search for what is prayer. And he ended up getting the answer from a very, very old monk. And the monk took pity on him. He realized he was a Western brain and would have difficulty with it. But he said, it's not about the words we say. It's not about the chants we do. It's not about the beads. It's not about the flags. It's not about the drumming. Prayer is the energy in our heart that we get generated when we do some of those different things. But the admonition was to pray constantly. And the way you pray constantly is you keep that energy in your heart. And that energy is what you were just referring to, the essence of yourself, the energy of the newborn love, the energy of creation. And he was shocked to learn that and dig into it more. He wrote another book about it in 2006, The Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer. And the essence of it is, if you're not feeling that energy, you're not praying. If you haven't, as you just said so well, if you haven't tuned your antenna, your receiving energy being, to the frequency of creation, to the frequency of the Creator, to that energy of love, then you're not praying. Now, you can't ever be separated from that energy. It's the thing in which you have your being. It's the ground and substance. It's the air you breathe. It's you are connected to all of it. But I can take my conscious awareness off of it and focus on something else, focus on some anger or some fear or some negative judgment of myself. And in that way, I'm blocking myself from getting the full benefits of that energy. So that was So that was how I spent the morning and what I talked to two people about so far in sessions, and right in line with what you were just giving the intro on.
Cool. You know, the other thing that can take us off of and out of that thing called prayer is that we can be taught that it's about bowing your head and saying nice words, totally exactly against what Yeshua said to you. He said, don't be known for your much speaking. Stop all those words. And or, you know, you're down on your hands and knees with your hands folded. I can be, remember, as a kid, you know, being taught that prayer was you're down on your hands and knees and you're saying, Our Father who art in heaven, or Hail Mary, or whatever it is. And when they said, you know, there'll come a time when your whole life will become a prayer, it was like, all I can imagine from that is square knees. How could you live if that's all you did? They didn't tell us what the real thing was. And it's interesting. I haven't touched into Greg Braden's work in that regard. But it's interesting that he found the monk enlightened enough to tell him that, you know, prayer is setting a trap for God, but that you become, and God being love, that you become the space where the active mind and the active presence of love shows up in you and functions in your life. I mean, it's just, that's cool to hear that's what he came up with. Do you know where he went to find that input, to be given that advice?
No, it was one of the oldest monks that he could find. It was at the end of a long journey, but I don't remember whether it was in India or some other continent, but it was a monastery that was very remote.
Cool. Well, you know, when Dan McDougall sent the expedition to the Middle East to find a manuscript, you know, they were working with a manuscript that was not complete. It was 7th century Aramaic text, and it was not complete. And so he funded an expedition going to the Middle East, and they went to a monastery, and he got into a conversation with what was described as this ancient monk that was quite overweight. Actually, they carried this man around on a pallet, and he was the elder of the particular monastery where they actually acquired the Kabir's manuscript. And according to what Dan said, was,
you know, they met with this guy and they spent a couple of days in conversation, and the man realized that in the West, much as you just said with Greg Braden, realized that they were from the West and they had no idea, and I guess kind of out of the desire to support and pity, a combination of the two, this monk allowed them to purchase this manuscript, you know, gave them this a 10th century copy of a first century text, the Kabbalist manuscript, and gave them instruction on how to read it. That's what sourced this whole project, was that manuscript. Interestingly enough, 3 days after they acquired the manuscript from this monk in this monastery, an article appeared in the Ankara News, and the monastery was raided, destroyed, and as far as we know, all of the monks were killed. So it's interesting that the similarity and the parallel with what Greg came up with, that it was out of, you know, I realize you guys are stuck in your minds and you don't have a clue. And yet this Western world, people go around with their high hat on, like, you know, I'm the only one. I was looking the other day online, and there are approximately 41,000 different so-called Christian sects. 41,000, all with different beliefs, and they all think they've got the truth. And they have a dogma and a doctrine that they pound into people through fear, and they say, if you don't believe this, then you're going to go to hell. When Yeshua said, here, I got some tools for you guys. Here, I got a way for you to achieve direct relationship with love. Here, take this and use it.
Well, that went awfully quiet. Are you there, Michael? Jeannie, are you there? Okay, maybe I'm the one who went dead. Anyway, I would say it'd be great if we could have the caller, but I don't know how to get the caller's mic muted. So if you have called in at 646-200-4169 and your hand is raised, take a chance that you might get me to hear you.
Hi there.
You said hello.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Yeah, the first caller is actually Magda, 417. How are you doing, Magda?
Hello. I'm glad you're back. I'm just calling in for a short question to Michael or you, Jeannie. I wanted to know if Michael got the information I sent a text about Mimi, who would like to speak with him about his forgiveness work for a documentary that she is making.
And I appreciate you sending it, and I will be in touch with her today to see what we can arrange. That's awesome.
Wonderful. Okay. All right, I'll let you go to the next call. Have a beautiful day. Love you all.
Thank you, dear heart. Appreciate you. So I say what Yeshua, and I apologize, my phone cut off. Well, what can I say? Cell phones. But what Yeshua says is, here, I've got a way for you to connect directly to our Father. And it's about how to do that. It's not about somebody's dogma or doctrine, 41,000 churches all believing that they have the truth. One of the things about this work that I'm really clear about is there's nothing to believe. You don't have to please. Don't believe a word that Dr. Tim says or that I say or Rex when he's on the show or Gene. Don't believe a word of it. Just hear it and then put it to work in your life and see if it works. If it does, then you will come to your own connection to the active presence of love.
Thank you.
There won't be a doctrine. There won't be a dogma. It's just connect to that. And here are the how-tos that he gave us, and that's what we're here to support. And Magda, we appreciate you and all that you do to help keep us on track, and especially to
to label the archives. You know, anyone who's not aware of it, there are, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows in the archives where we cover these ideas from 1,000 different angles. You can go back, and Magda has labeled many of them, given us a synopsis of what's there. If you come across one that you listen to that does not have that synopsis, we would really appreciate it if you'd write a brief synopsis about what it's about so that we can connect it to that show and people will be able to search through and look for the topics that they would like to know about. So thank you for that, Monica. And Jeannie, do you have another caller for us? Is there anything happening in the chat room we need to be aware of?
Our chat room is really quiet today and nobody else has their hand up. So if someone presses 1, you're next in line with no legs.
Okay, well, let's just share a little bit about what we're doing here. We're in Las Vegas, and so for the next 3 nights, we'll be at the Unity Center, Unity the Valley, on Warm Springs Road here in Las Vegas. And if you'd like to join us, we've got 3 free open workshops. We'd be delighted for you to come and be part of the process. Hold the space for us an hour after the show today. There's so much going on that keeping up with it between Costa Rica and what's been happening in Europe and everything that's moving. We're meeting at noon with a gentleman last night in the On Creating Consciously workshop. I brought up the statistics that I had been given that the VA tracks about 25% of veterans, and that there are approximately 15 suicides a day. And this gentleman that we're meeting with at noon actually is working to bring vets the tools and wants us to participate, but he actually gave us some corrections last night, and he was sharing, and I don't have all the details of it, but the fact that the VA leaves out the state of California, the state of Texas, et cetera, and that, you know, I mean, let's look at the insanity of this, and I invite everybody to hold a space of love for it because this is something that needs to change. But he was correcting my numbers last night, and he said that the numbers are covered up. But in fact, coming back from the Middle East, there are 200 vets a day that are committing suicide. I mean, how insane is that? What is being done to those young men and young women who are told they're going into service? I mean, really start to question this language, folks. That they're coming back and at a rate of 200 a day are killing themselves. He also said that 50% of returning vets consider suicide. What insanity has been forced into their minds to force them to function as non-humans to go and do what they're doing there? He also shared with us that within that military system that so many people hold in such high esteem, and for those who deserve the high esteem in the military, and I know they're there, we honor you and we appreciate you. You may have been brainwashed to do something insane, but we honor you. But he was telling us last night that 75 women a day in the military system are raped, and 15 men a day are raped. A day. You got to start to question, folks. And you got to start to make changes. You've got to start to insist that something change, because as this rolls on, the toll to the children of these people, to the parents of these people, to the spouse of these people, to the people themselves is astronomical. Aside from the trillions of dollars that we spent on a totally fraudulent war, one that we went into under fraud, and we're still doing it. It's time for a wake-up. It's time for us to start to speak from the, not from the brainwash of the culture, but from the actual awareness of the presence of love, and to start to speak up as that empowered love to change the game and to bring healing to these lives. So if you would, I'm bringing this up so that we can invite you to hold the space for us. We're meeting with this gentleman at noon, and they're creating a national program to take the tools of healing to these wounded warriors. And so if you would just hold that whole project in your heart and hold these people coming back, this insanity they've been subject to,
you know, it's bizarre. It's time for a wake up. You know, there's a video out there called The Wounded Warrior, and one of the things that that the vets are saying is, well, we're trained to hate. I think it's time to start to use hate crime laws to bring the people to justice who teach hatred, within or without of the government or the military or whatever it is. It's time to bring them to justice. That is to hold them accountable for their behavior. Out of a space of love, yes. Out of a space where we offer support for healing, yes, but it's time for accountability. And those people who are destroying lives, even if it's under the guise of whatever the disguise is, it's time to hold them accountable. You know, one of my mentors was a gentleman who was a Superior Court judge, and this man never, as a Superior Court judge who put thousands of people into prison, never punished anyone. Judge Asadi Kelly would have someone who'd done the most heinous crime come before them and offer his love to them and share that the community had taken up a collection and built buildings with bars around them and asked him to decide who was safe in the community and who wasn't. And that while he loved this person who committed this heinous crime, while he chose to stand as the space of love for them, he also stood as the space of love for his community. And because he was given the power to make that choice, he would inform this person, you obviously are not safe within the community, so I'm going to lock you up. Maybe 10, 20, 30, 50 years for life. No punishment. Accountability. Those who teach hatred under whatever guise it is need to be held accountable for their behavior. Offered the opportunity to heal. And if there are so-called rules on the books that say if you do hate crimes, then you spend time in prison, then it's time for them to go there and actually set our prison system up as a place where healing happens. Yes? You isolate those who are not safe from the community so that they don't infect other minds. And then you put them in a space. You know, the whole idea of penance in the penal institution is another insane dynamic. You put them in a place where the community is safe, where they are safe from themselves and from each other, and then you begin to teach them the truth. We literally, with laws of living, when you shift the mind back, the most natural direction for a human being to go is back to the active presence of love. But in a culture that is filled with words and thoughts of viciousness, violence, war, degradation, rape, suicide, it's hard to get there. Support us in getting laws of living into the prisons. And we thank you, Rex and Michelle, and the whole team that's been part of that over the last year of taking the work into one of the most high-security prisons in the state of Michigan. Support us. Do something about it. And if you go back to the ancient scriptures, it said, be not just hearers of these words, but doers. Do something about it. Get off of whatever it is that keeps you busy so that you don't have time and create time to become part of the process of healing our planet, because it's not heading in the right direction. It's time. We need more people on the team who dedicate their time, their intelligence, their money, and their energy to making a shift and making a change. Everything we have is dedicated to it, and we're two people. And then we have Dr. Tim, and he's dedicated to it, and he's one person in Chicago. And we have Rex, and we have Michelle, and we have people with support groups, Ray here in Las Vegas, who are dedicated, who are working effectively to make that shift. We invite each of you to start to look at what of your resources are you willing to put toward changing the game on planet Earth? Or has the game so brainwashed you that you're going to just keep rolling along with your drugs and your money and your sex and your power and, you know, the games of the world. I stood in the casino here the other day and just watched how much human life is being sucked out of people, how much wealth that could be doing useful, decent things in the world is being sucked into this city and going into pockets that don't appear to be doing much other than building monuments to themselves. I mean, you look at the buildings in the city of Las Vegas. I look out the window, and I look right into a building that's probably 15 stories tall. I was told that the man bought it, paid cash for it. No wealth production to have these monuments, conning people into giving up their wealth for nothing. How many are willing to start to change the direction of your life and get out of the brainwash of the culture? And actually, you know, one of the Beatitudes says, this latent neural structure that God implanted in you to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. You who work effectively to produce the peace and understanding through service, produce the peace and understanding under and accord with God's will. And what it says is, you know, you'll notice there are those religions will say, well, the way you get to be a son or daughter of God is you talk about blood and you get washed in it. Well, that's not Yeshua. Yeshua says, here's how you do it. If you want to be called the offspring of love, the offspring of the Creator, a son or daughter of God, you work through service effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with love's will. He's got a different story to tell than these denominations with all their crazy stuff, all their viciousness and violence and condemnation, their words of hatred and fear. He's got a different story to tell. It's about living as the active presence of love, and that's what we're here to support you in doing. So, Jenny, do you have a caller for us? We've got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, we're actually down to 2 minutes, but the caller is area code 702. You're on the air.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Jeannie. This is Julie here in Henderson.
Hey there, young lady. And welcome. How can we support you in 2 minutes today?
Well, I have been attending your workshops, and the previous week in the other Unity, and this week in the Unity of Las Vegas, Center of Las Vegas. And I plan on doing the Still Breath workshop this Saturday, so knowing my time is short, I won't go into my other stuff, but I just would appreciate if you would give me a mind shifter to get me more into my heart, as I find I get things conceptually and I miss the mark of having the experience.
Okay, cool. I got a mind shifter for you. And just a real short form for anybody who's new to the show, doesn't know what a mind shifter is. You take this thought that I'm going to offer to Julie, you take a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle. You write the mind shifter on the left side of the page, and then everything that comes up in response to it on the right side of the page. So here's the mind shifter I'd offer you. It's safe and healing for me to live totally out of my mind. It's safe and healing. Breathe on that one. For me to live totally out of my mind. You know, the forgiveness process is collapses the output of the insane mind, and ultimately to heal, we really truly have to be out of our minds, and that's what we're heading to support people, so that we get into the being, that mind of being, rather than the mind of the body. So thank you for that question, and you know, if you had something else to ask, maybe we could start the show out with it tomorrow. We're delighted that you're with us, and we're glad that you're coming to be with us every night at the workshops. Anybody who's in Las Vegas, come join us. Check on the website. You'll see our schedule for the next 3 days, and then Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing for Saturday. And in the meantime, give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.